balance agri nutrients.
Right.
So thank you very much for coming in. We've read both the original submission and the evidence that you provided, so thank you very much for that. You don't need to read either of those two documents out to us, but you're welcome to speak to them and highlight key points, or if you've got further written information to table with us.
Thank you. And predominantly thank you for the opportunity to speak with the panel this afternoon. Balance believes that a recurring theme of other submissions and evidence which you've seen is that while it's recognised that water quality is important and must be maintained or improved, policy must take account of economic and financial implications, be practical, flexible and underpinned by robust science. And Balance very much echoes those views. We try to ground our submissions and interactions with regional councils across six key areas. The first is sustainability and its three pillars, which you will all be very familiar with. The social one, maintaining the social licence to farm and ensuring that is within community goals. Economic sustainability. We're very well aware that most regions of New Zealand rely on farming and agribusiness, and both need to thrive, and as the panel are very well aware, this is very much the case in Southland. And of course, the environmental pillar. Seeing genuine, measurable environmental improvements through innovative farm practices and new technologies. Our second key pillar is around good management practice, and we're in full agreement that farmers should be operating at this level and believe that there should be a common definition of such. One of these, which we are in favour of, is the booklet developed primarily in Canterbury, but now seen in other regions as well, the industry agreed good management practices relating to water quality. And this one agreed across the dairy, sheep and beef, deer, horticulture, arable, pig, fertiliser and irrigation industries would seem to be suitable rather than trying to recreate another set of rules and another set of good management practices specifically for Southland. It lays out 21 clear, defined and practical good management practices for farmers to aspire to. Balance is in full agreement that further good management practices may and should develop, and a document such as this should be a living one, sitting preferably outside the plan, which can then evolve over time and across regions. Balance considers it beneficial that this also defines the GMPs to be met, not how they should be met. This then allows farmers and agribusiness to continue innovating for industry and community good. We think it's vital and see in other submissions that science informs and shapes the plan and how it is to be implemented. Our concerns here are particularly around the physiographic zones and the land use rules. With regard to the physiographic zones, we have sympathy with the submissions and evidence provided by others such as Fonterra, Horticulture New Zealand and Dean Carson of Agribusiness Group. This is new science being used in a regulatory regime. This seems rather analogous with the early planning uses of Overseer, such as we've seen in the One Plan. At the very least, there seems to be an important decision to be made. If the zones are to be used, should they sit inside or outside the plan? And what should be the mechanism for amending or modifying them? We fully advocate the appropriate use of Overseer and are developing tools such as Mitigator, which I understand my colleague Jim Risk presented to you as part of David Diprose's evidence. Reduction of complexity is something we see as vital and was partially mentioned by the previous submitter. We believe consideration should be given to the appropriateness of many of the land use rules and how they can be simplified for farmers and landowners through the adoption of the industry agreed good management practices. These should be implemented on farm through a specific farm environment plan. We also echo the concerns of Fonterra about the need for clarity of mapping at a zone and a farm level. And this is something we are already seeing delaying farm environment planning processes across other regions. When it comes to the reduction of frequency of reporting and auditing, as Balance have no intention of operating an industry audited self-management scheme, we will not comment on these except for echoing the concerns of Richard Allen of Fonterra that there is a lack of clarity in the proposed plan. We would also suggest that the commissioners consider how and where such a non-consented scheme fits within the parameters of the RMA, something which has come up in discussion with more than one regional council recently. Our final pressing concern is with regard to sensible and achievable implementation timelines. In our original submission, we raised concerns about the timeline for farmers to have nutrient budgets and farm environment plans, and we welcome the report of the officers seeking to push this out a further 12 months. However, we remain particularly concerned about the assertion in the Section 32 report that only 20% of farmers will require new nutrient budgets. With respect, we've heard this before. We've also heard that capacity will become available, and this has not been our experience across the country, where year-end nutrient budgets of sufficient quality for compliance continue to be majoritively produced by the Ravensdown Environmental and the Balanced Farm Sustainability teams. Quality versus quantity for nutrient budgets and farm environment plans remains a challenge in most regions, something that we've seen recently come to the fore in the Hawke's Bay, where another organisation conducted nutrient budgeting of the dairy farms in the Tukituk catchment and reported that they generally lay within 30 to 40% of the LUC table. Unfortunately, when we've gone back and done those nutrient budgets properly, the lowest one is 120% above the LUC table. In addition to this, we then see situations such as the waiting list that we have in Canterbury, which exists for both of the fertiliser companies and other consultants. Finally, as noted in our submission, the company generally accepts there is a need for a consenting regime for farming activities. At the same time, we consider it is critical that any regulated consenting regime is not unnecessarily onerous or costly to landowners and farm managers. The relief sought in our submission respect the values that the community as a whole places on water, and we thank the Commissioners for your consideration.
Thank you for that. I see if the panel have questions, but I just want to ask you one thing first. You referred to, in terms of GMPs, the Environment Canterbury document. Commissioner Ellison and I are very familiar with that. We were both Commissioners on the Land and Water Plan in Variations 1, 2, 4, 5 and 6. Yes. And also I sat on the Hiranui Committee as well. That document is a Canterbury-specific document agreed by Canterbury-specific organisations. Is there any move to get that document formally endorsed by the Southland equivalent agencies?
That's certainly something that Balance would advocate for and have been advocating for.
No, that's not my question. My question is that currently underway? Has the industry got its collective act together and is getting that document formally adopted in Southland?
My awareness was that the word Canterbury has been removed from that document, and the industry is seeking to have it agreed across other regions.
Right.
And that is primarily from the, I guess as we expand beyond just an ECAN-centric view, then what we look at is more and more concerns of multiple farm owners who are dealing with irregular rules across different regions. And so if we can at least define what good management practice is, then at least we then have some clarity as to what we're striving for.
Yeah, and I understand all of that, but my question's quite specific about that document. So you say the industry is getting the word Canterbury removed from that document so it can be applied nationwide. Do you have any kind of reference to that? Is there some report or some website?
My understanding is it's back with MFE to look at applying that out across the regions, yes, and that there is a specific exercise going on at MFE level to achieve that.
Again, can you, probably not now, but can you go away and find out something more, a bit more definitive about that, either a link to a part of the MFE webpage that specifies that's happening with deadlines, and just so we have some kind of firm basis for understanding what that process is about and what its timeframes are. All right, Morris, any questions?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to see to get a bit more detail about the use of the physiographic zone. So you talked about that in your submission and just now. Can you give us an idea of what you think the best way to use these would be for the purposes of the water plan?
I guess to us, the maps to my left very adequately convey the challenge which the physiographic zones present for landowners and rural professionals. If we're seeking to remove complexity, this seems to be adding additional complexity to even a situation where we look at the freshwater management unit, something that farmers can clearly understand. We then overlay the physiographic zones. But as I say, I guess our primary concern is how well developed are these zones, how well defined are these zones, and when you look even at the plan, the fact that we have the nine zones, which are then effectively broken down with common rules across many of them, you have to question what exactly are the differences across these. I think we're looking at something which may well prove to be extremely useful over time, however, is now the time to be looking it into a land and water plan for the region and setting rules based on that when we are looking at relatively early science. And I say, I hate to refer anybody back to the one plan, but it does seem rather analogous that if we're locking ourselves into something which we're not entirely sure where this is going to end up, and we end up with a challenge such as we've seen in that and other regions.
Okay, so make haste slowly.
And I think, if it's something that is going to develop, we've seen specific examples of farms where they have got the physiographic zones mapped across the farm and they can refer to soil types outside of that. It's around what's the scale that the zones have been created on, what's the scale of the soil sampling, what's the scale of change which is going to force across an individual property. And to the previous submitter's point, is this actually going to then help us to produce the best environmental outcomes for the region, along with allowing ease of farming operation within the social licence?
Okay, thanks very much. It's been helpful.
In the balance evidence on policy 40, determining the term of resource consent, clients were a submitter on that and also put further evidence in. They're still not satisfied with past performance, for example, being a criteria. Do you want to expand further on that?
I think we've certainly tried to cover it in our submissions and evidence already provided. I guess we see it as we don't believe it is entirely fair. But we can see where the council is coming from in terms of saying that if a farming operation has previously struggled to meet consent conditions, I think we believe there's a reason for the land management team to work very closely with that particular operator. However, given the reality of generational change, of farming practice change, of speed of change across the rural industry as a whole, we think that to tie the exact terms of the consent to those previous activities is maybe a little harsh, and that perhaps advocating for monitoring regimes outside of those consent conditions to ensure that people who have struggled in the past are actually being able to achieve what we're seeking from the plan.
Thank you.
No. It's pretty comprehensive, I think I've put my head around it. Thank you.
No, I'm happy as well. Thank you.
So, just two things from me. One comment, certainly understand the issue you and other submitters are raising with regard to clause 6 of policy 40. And we certainly understand that it's incumbent on decision makers when making resource consent decisions, we're obliged to assume that conditions of consent will be complied with. And if they're not, then that's an enforcement issue rather than something we should overbear on a future duration. So I certainly understand the point you're making there. Just wanted to ask you a question about these GMPs again. We've had a brief discussion about the Environment Canterbury document. If we were to adopt a reference to that document, as you've asked us to and a number of other submitters have asked us to, that would still be a document that sits outside the plan. It wouldn't be part of the plan. And so what I'm struggling to do is understand the difference between referring to that document, which sits outside the plan, as opposed to referring to the documents that Environment Southland has produced and has on its website that also sit outside the plan. What's the difference?
Yeah, I think in our mind, and obviously we submitted that in the current state it refers only to the documents which sit on the Southland website.
Yeah.
And other than that, there is no clear definition of what good management practice means. and how that is to be updated and managed. I think it's, you know, one of the things that we try to work with all of the regional councils across the country, particularly around implementation, is to gain consistency. And therefore, that's what we see as a benefit of going to that particular document. If there is a drive to get consistency across the country, because with the greatest of respect to every region, we know everybody's different, we know the challenges are different. However, the fundamental challenge of nitrogen, phosphate, sediment, pathogen loss are consistent across each of the regions in which we're currently working. And I think to aid the levy bodies who are looking to assist farmers, to aid the rural professional organisations such as ourselves, and to aid farmers, there is a need for some consistency across the country. And if we can achieve that through a document which then regional councils are brought into, and the levy boards and organisations such as ourselves and the Third Association are brought into, then that should have a better outcome than us trying to relitigate a different version of good management practice in each region.
Certainly understand that. So look forward to that further information about what MFE are doing to nationalise. I don't know if that's a proper word.
Probably not at the moment, but yeah.
Nationalise that.
Very good.
All right, thanks very much.
Cool, thank you.